high levels of adversity in childhood, for example, experiencing abuse or family dysfunction, may trigger a toxic stress response, which in turn can impact lifelong physical and mental health, and may also have intergenerational effects. This premise underlies a new BMJ collection called Toxic Stress and PTSD in Children. This year, the US state of California launched an innovative program to routinely screen patients in primary care for childhood adversity and toxic stress and attempt early intervention, hoping to improve outcomes and equity. I'm Richard Hurley, an editor at the BMJ, and I spoke to Nadine Burke Harris, a pediatrician and the Surgeon General of California, to find out more.
My name is Dr. Nadine Burke Harris. I am a pediatrician and I am the Surgeon General of the state of California.
And you've kindly co-chaired this collection of articles for the BMJ and to accompany the WISH Summit, Toxic Stress, Mitigating Childhood Adversity That Affects Lifelong Physical and Mental Health. And you're a co-author as well. What are you hoping this collection will achieve?
Well, I'm hoping this collection will help to raise awareness about the impact of early adversity on health and development, and help to align our efforts globally as we understand that what we experience in childhood has the potential to shape our biology and impact long-term health outcomes, including increasing the risk for 7 out of the 10 leading causes of death globally. And as we better understand the scientific mechanisms by which early adversity impact both short and long-term health, as well as mental health and development, that gives us greater tools to be able to improve outcomes for children and the adults they will become.
Great. So going back a little bit then, could you explain for the BMJ's general readership, what is toxic stress and why does it matter?
Yes, toxic stress is a concept that is often confused. I think many people, when they think of the term toxic stress, are often thinking about the stressor, right? The experience of adversity, when in reality, the term toxic stress actually refers to the body's physiologic response. The toxic stress response was defined by the United States, the National Academies for Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, as the prolonged activation of the biological stress response that can lead to changes in brain architecture and can lead to long-term changes in the immune system, hormonal systems, and even the way our DNA is read and transcribed. And that prolonged activation of the biological stress response and the concomitant biological changes are what is now known as the toxic stress response. And we now understand that this is what leads to increased risk of short and long-term health problems that are associated with early adversity.
And I think one of the striking, fascinating things is that the toxic stress response can have profound physical as well as psychological impact.
Yes, that's right. So what we see is that with this prolonged activation of the stress response, right, where we see increased levels of stress hormones or changes to these levels of stress hormones, that can activate inflammation in the body. It can activate changes in the way our immune system and our hormonal systems function. And it can actually change the way that our DNA is read and transcribed. And so when we look at the impact of adverse childhood experiences on health, for example, we see that an individual who has experienced 4 or more adverse childhood experiences have double the risk for ischemic heart disease, right? Which is one of the leading causes of death globally, as well as significant increased risk for stroke, cancer, and other serious health consequences. And so really understanding early adversity, childhood adversity, as a root cause of some of these common and very consequential health conditions, I think allows us to be able to better understand how we all come together, how we use the tools of public health, as well as using the tools of science and medicine to be able to address toxic stress as a public health crisis.
Something else I took away from the collection is how, I mean, there's a lot of pieces on toxic stress and adversity in war zones and after natural disasters, these kinds of situations where it's very understandable. But this is also a problem in rich, stable settings. That's right?
That's absolutely right. So what the science shows us, and I think one of the key pieces about toxic stress, is that the toxic stress response develops in absence of adequate buffering caregiving resources. So that actually is a key definitional component, and it also gives us a powerful insight into how we can address toxic stress. But for example, here in the United States, what we recognize is that, our data shows that between 55% and 2/3 of Americans have experienced at least one adverse childhood experience, right? And that between 13 and 17% of Americans have experienced four or more adverse childhood experiences.
What kind of experiences are you talking about there?
So when we talk about adverse childhood experiences, we're talking about a specific set of criteria that were investigated by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that include physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, physical or emotional neglect, or growing up in a household where a parent was mentally ill, substance dependent, incarcerated, where there was parental separation or divorce, or domestic violence. And so you'll notice among those 10 criteria that it doesn't include the violence of war. It doesn't include many of the conditions that children around the globe are experiencing. But what we now recognize is that all of these factors, so this research was really discovered just a little over 2 decades ago, was when the CDC published their seminal study on adverse childhood experiences. And what we've understood since then is that the final common pathway, if you will, the thing that all of these things have in common, is that they activate the toxic stress response, that they lead to this prolonged activation of the biological stress response. And then that leads to these long and short-term health consequences. Now, we now understand that the 10 factors investigated by the CDC aren't the only factors to activate the toxic stress response, and that children witnessing the traumas of war, for example, or other adversities may also increase the risk for toxic stress. But now that we understand the biological process, the toxic stress response, the pathway that's activated, that really gives us some very promising insights into how we can better address the impacts of early adversity on health, mental health, behavior, and lifelong consequences.
It's really useful and really important to speak to you about this, because California and your state has spearheaded a novel initiative to screen for toxic stress, I understand. Can you tell us more about that, please?
Yes, that's absolutely right. So the cornerstone of California's approach, and let me just pause to say that for a long time, California has been investing in initiatives to support childhood health and well-being, to support healthy childhood development, and to support the families where in which young children are growing. But what we recognize is that a key aspect that has been missing is the recognition of the toxic stress response as a health condition and responding to that specifically so that we can not only reduce the long-term health challenges, but also prevent the intergenerational transmission, which is something that is very common around the globe. So here in California, we are launching a really world-leading effort to train our healthcare professionals on how to screen. And we use adverse childhood experiences, the criteria that was identified in the CDC study, as the tool that we use for screening for cumulative adversity, to assess the risk that an individual is experiencing a toxic stress response. Because one of the challenges that we have is that currently clinically, there are no clinical diagnostic criteria for toxic stress. So the best that we can do right now is to assess risk of toxic stress. And then we can utilize the science and the data, some evidence-based practices that are demonstrated to regulate the physiologic stress response, right? And so pairing routine screening for early assessment and intervention with evidence-based and promising practices to regulate the stress response is really a key part of this novel effort that we are doing here in California.
Is the screening just of children, or is it adult patients as well for what happened in their childhood?
It's for children and adults. And the reason for that is because in children, clearly there's a compelling opportunity to intervene in the moment to reduce the dose of adversity and employ buffering strategies that can help to either prevent the development of the toxic stress response or ameliorate the effects once that's already in place, or for a child who's already at high risk. For adults, clearly we're not going back to undo what happened in their childhood. But what's happening now is that as I mentioned, an individual who has four or more adverse childhood experiences is at twice the risk of developing ischemic heart disease as an individual with zero ACEs. And for our healthcare providers who are treating heart disease, or who are treating diabetes, or are treating any other health condition that is associated with toxic stress, it's really crucial for them to recognize that they may also have to add, as an adjunct to their usual care for that health condition, strategies that are focused on regulating the stress response, right? And that may be key to helping to prevent worse outcomes in individuals who are at high risk of having a toxic stress response. The other thing that's really key, right, is that in California, we've taken this approach of primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention, or prevention, early detection, and treatment. And when we address an adult's history of high levels of childhood adversity, when we educate adults to let them know that what happened in their childhood may be impacting their health, their behavior, their relationships, and their ability to form healthy relationships, what that does is that that intervention for adults is also prevention for the next generation, right? So really taking this public health approach of primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention, and then also looking across the life course as how we can and how we can prevent intergenerational transmission is really key to achieving the bold goal that we have set in California, which is to cut adverse childhood experiences and toxic stress in half in a generation.
And how long has the screening been running now?
So this began in January of 2020, and we're very excited. We've trained over 14,000 healthcare providers on how to screen for adverse childhood experiences and toxic stress, how to recognize the signs, and how to respond with trauma-informed care. So trauma-informed care is good for all patients, regardless, but especially for patients with a history of adversity. And we're very excited about advancing our healthcare system to respond to early adversity as a root cause of many of our most pressing health challenges.
And how is it going so far? I mean, it's very early days. What feedback or what evidence are you getting about from providers, from patients, and about whether this is effective? Is it successful?
That's a great question. So the first feedback that we have, it really comes from the providers who have taken the training and become certified so that they can receive reimbursement. Because in California, we're not just training our healthcare providers, but we're also reimbursing them for conducting the screening. And the feedback that we've received so far, number one, is that providers have found it incredibly valuable to their practice. And of the healthcare providers who have taken the training, 97% have said that they intend to start screening for adverse childhood experiences, or that their current practice was reinforced. So there were very few who said, "Well, you know, I've taken the training, I understand this, but I don't really know if this is something that I can do, or if I." Or if this is something that feels compelling to me. 97% have really felt like this was something that they wanted to add to their practice. And the vast majority, I don't have the number in front of me, but I can, the vast majority have said that they anticipate that they have the tools and will be able to include it in their practice. The biggest concern or potential obstacle that providers have shared with us about implementation is time. So the biggest worry is, you know, for someone who already has a busy medical practice, adding one more thing. But the fact that 97% of our providers have said that they intend to incorporate this into their practice, I think shows how important our providers believe that this work is.
It's great. Have you had feedback from patients?
So we have not. I will say that it takes a fair amount of time for the patient level information to be able to feed back to us. One of the things that we've done here in California is that we have created a learning and quality improvement collaborative. And through that learning and quality improvement collaborative that's being led by the University of California, San Francisco, and the RAND Corporation, we are collecting data not only from healthcare providers about their experience, best practices, and how to improve the screening process, but also from patients as well. So we are assessing for patient level outcomes, but unfortunately we don't have that data yet.
Sure. And I think in some ways correct me if I'm wrong, but there's some controversy around the idea that the evidence is strong enough for screening like this. What do you say to that?
Yes, I listen carefully when I hear those criticisms. I think that in doing a large-scale and innovative initiative like this, that it is undoubtedly there will be some controversy, right? And the thing that I would say to that, number one, is that the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the United States National Academies on Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, and the American Academy of Pediatrics have all recommended screening for precipitants of toxic stress, right? So this initiative in California is really based off of recommendations from the most well-respected scientific bodies in the United States. But the other pieces of the response, number one, is a recognition, you know, I think folks are concerned about what about harm, right? The screening tool that we are using in California for children is a screening tool that was developed as part of a randomized control trial on screening for adverse childhood experiences that was done at UCSF, University of California, San Francisco. And so we're really basing, you know, our tool is based off of a randomized control trial looking at these effects. We're following the recommendations of some of the most robust scientific bodies. But one other piece, one criticism that I've heard is, you know, we should really wait for the United States Preventive Services Task Force to weigh in, right? Why don't we wait until we have some more robust evidence? And I recently looked this up. And when we look at when other models of screening efforts, for example, screening for HIV testing was HIV testing was developed, I believe it was in 1986. And I believe that the first U.S. Surgeon General's report on HIV/AIDS was in 1987. Can you, I would offer you to venture a guess as to when the United States Preventive Services Task Force recommended screening for HIV?
I'm guessing it didn't.
It was in 2013. Right. It was in 2013. And the point there is that in the decades in between the time where a medical innovation happens and when there is something like a recommendation from a body like the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, a lot of work has to be done. And the work that we are doing in California is part of forwarding the field so that we can get to that point. We're doing this cautiously. We're doing this in a really robust and evidence-based way. But we have to move forward because for every day that we are waiting, there are children who are being exposed to adverse childhood experiences and who are not being identified, who are going on to develop a toxic stress response, and who will ultimately pay the consequences with their health or with their lives. And so there is a cost to not moving forward with this work. And in California, we believe that we have the evidence to move cautiously forward with some rigorously applied scientific frameworks to move to scale.
And I guess what you're doing is going to be the subject of lots of research in future. Where should research focus on this issue? What next for the evidence? How can the evidence be built further?
Well, there's a great need for much more research around the area of toxic stress. Number one, as I mentioned, we don't have clinical diagnostic criteria for toxic stress. Right now, the best that we can do is estimate risk. And so that is a key next step in the work that we need to do. Another key next step is there are a number of research entities right now, research consortia, that are looking at the development of biomarkers or biobehavioral measures for toxic stress, which will greatly aid in our ability not only to diagnose toxic stress, but also to assess the efficacy of our interventions, right? In addition, I think that one of the things that is key is research into not only, I think the mental health and behavioral outcomes of toxic stress are the most widely known, but a better understanding around how do we manage some of the common health consequences that are associated with a toxic stress response, like asthma, like diabetes, like other common health conditions where we don't have clinical guidelines that incorporate this recognition of toxic stress as part of the clinical physiology. And then also looking in, around the world in different countries, different communities, looking at other risk factors for toxic stress, like exposure to war, separation from families, and especially now during the COVID-19 global pandemic, which is increasing childhood adversities and limiting access to the buffering care that reduces the risk of the toxic stress response. How do we implement interventions, effective interventions, in different cultural contexts, in different regional contexts around the globe to improve health and life outcomes for all children?
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's absolutely fascinating work, what you're doing, really, really interesting. I don't have any more questions, but is there anything you'd like to say to BMJ readers?
The only thing that I would want to add was that I did find that number. It was 91% of our clinicians did say that they felt confident that they would be able to make these practice changes in their practice. In terms of some final words, when we look at the impact of early adversity on health, and specifically when we use the adverse childhood experiences criteria, where we can actually look at things like relative risk of heart disease and stroke and cancer and Alzheimer's, what we see is that the impacts are tremendous, right? They are profound. Early adversity is associated with not only 7 out of 10 of the leading causes of death globally, but also increased risk of incarceration, increased risk of perpetrating violence, impairment in learning, and increased risk of non-completion of education. And when we take the impacts in the aggregate, we recognize that being able to dramatically reduce adverse childhood experiences and toxic stress globally could be one of the most important scientific advances of the 21st century. And so really enlisting doctors into finding approaches to treating toxic stress is critically helpful, even as we are fighting the global pandemic and looking at all of these other major public health challenges. I think that when we better understand the stress response system, we can better care for our patients in times of stress. And that has never been more timely than right now as we are struggling with this global pandemic.
Fascinating stuff. and evidence from California's implementation will show whether this approach can really make a difference. You can read more about this and other articles in the Toxic Stress and PTSD in Children collection at bmj.com/toxic-stress. As always, please share your views on the issue by posting a rapid response on bmj.com. We republish the best as letters to the editor. Thanks for listening.